What's Sophia?
Sophia's a fairy. Mm-hmm. I think Tinkerbell specifically, I think. But uh-huh. I don't remember that for
be
sure.
Peter Pan. Boom.
Peter Pan. I'm good.
Captain Hook.
Could be Captain Hook. That's an elaborate costume, though.
It is. You gotta like
to go pirate, to go Alden pirate, that's a big deal.
It's really the captain.
Yeah. That's... You got to have the coat and the hat.
And the, like the long curl thing. Yeah.
You gotta like, go full Captain Morgan.
Pirate is really like somewhat disheveled in a bandana. And that's you're true. Pretty good at being a pirate.
You need to be the captain. Yeah.
But if you're a captain, it's
and if I'm going to be the pirate, I'm going to be the captain.
Okay. All right, welcome back.
I don't know.
To the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And no Elise McCarter this week.
Is she off looking for Sasquatch again?
I think she's in San Antonio.
From now on, anytime. No, she's in Big Bend.
No, she's back from Big Bend.
Oh, she's just in San Antonio?
Yes. Weren't you there last week when we were like, what's our schedule? And she's like, I'm going to be in San Antonio.
I remember her saying she was going to be in Big Bend.
For the weekend!
She's I don't back. Remember that information.
Yeah, no, she's back.
Whatever.
Yeah.
She's not back. She's in San Antonio.
Yeah, she's back from Big Ben and is now in San Antonio.
She's looking for Sasquatch in San Antonio.
Good luck.
Anytime she's gone, she's looking for Sasquatch
for
from
sure.
now on. Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Go look for Sasquatch.
That's her new jam.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today?
A couple things.
Okay.
Yeah. Empathy.
All right.
And some news.
All right. Do you consider yourself empathic?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I do not consider myself an empath. I also don't like that word, so...
I think we should go on an elaborate rant for you just talking about it.
I might get there.
All right. We'll hold off on that.
I think if you said, if you're out there saying like, I'm an empath, I think for personally, I think it sounds pretentious. So like,
listeners, please write in to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you feel like you're an empath. All right. What do you got? What's our news story?
I got two actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Men lost at sea 29 days. Say it was a nice break from reality.
Okay. When being lost at sea is better than your reality, that might be worthy of a wake-up call for something. Yeah.
I know. It's sad to be like, you know what? Sounds kind of nice.
Yeah, I could do it.
It's like, I see the appeal.
Right. I mean, I guess, I don't know. It depends on what you're lost at sea with. I mean, are you just lost, but you've got like plenty of food and water and everything? Because I can see that. But if you're like lost and like wondering when your next meal is going to come, that sounds less fun.
Yeah, so these two men. I'm not going to pretend.
Like, can I be stranded at a beach resort?
That's not
lost. Does that count? Does that count?
I'm lost at a resort. Yes.
Can I get onto a cruise ship and just get lost on the cruise ship for a while?
They were traveling 200 kilometers over the ocean.
That's not that far.
I have no idea.
200K? All right, hold on. We can do the math.
I'm not going to.
10K is 6 miles. It's about 120 miles.
Okay, that's pretty far.
I mean... Like, that's all they're going. Like, ships go a lot further than that all the time.
They were in one small 60-horsepower motorboat with a sack of oranges for snacking.
Okay, that's a long way to go. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, a little motorboat. That's far.
Yeah, yeah,
it's sure. In the ocean. Oh. I'm not into that. And the storm came in. They were traveling, like, along an island. Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, like, as long as this island is on our left... We're good.
Sure. It's a good theory. Yeah.
But then the storm came in and they could no longer see the island.
Uh-oh.
Cut the engine to try to conserve power. And by the time the storm passed, they're just in the middle of the ocean and the GPS is broken.
And they have a bag of oranges.
They have a bag of oranges. Yes. So they floated 400 kilometers northwest of their starting point.
That'd be about 240
to a new
miles.
Country. Okay. There you go. Yeah. This is from the New York Post. Put this in miles.
Right.
We're not on this imperial system over
also,
here.
Also, listeners, put this in context. This is coming from the New York Post.
I saw it in other places. Okay. When I Googled it to refine it, okay. This was the first link.
All right.
They lived off those oranges, mm-hmm. coconuts they scooped from the sea, ooh. And rainwater collected on a tarp.
How would you collect coconuts from the... I didn't know coconuts would like float out to sea. I didn't know that would happen.
I don't know. I didn't know either.
Yeah.
I feel like if there's coconuts, there's an island nearby.
I mean, I guess the coconut's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
How'd that coconut get in the water? That's what you got to ask. Who put that coconut there?
God, I don't know.
It's a message in a bottle. Yes.
I think they just fall in the ocean, right?
But the tree doesn't grow over the ocean.
Some trees do.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
Tide comes in, washes coconuts out.
All right. All right. Yeah, tide comes in.
I don't know. How does the tide work? I don't know. Like, in reality.
The moon. That's how the tide works.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, but they said it was nice.
Okay.
Kind of nice. You know, they're happy to be back home, but it was a nice break from reality.
Sure.
So what do you think? Would you want a 29-day?
It's going to greatly depend on who it is that I'm with in that boat.
Me.
You and me for 29 days on a boat? I don't see this ending well for either of us.
It is pretty funny, though. You know what? It was kind of nice just to float in the ocean for 29 days.
Your general, it will all work out attitude after like 5 days of, you know, looking for coconuts floating in the ocean and collecting rainwater.
It's only been put to its greatest test at that point. I don't even like coconuts, so, you know.
I mean, I think you'd learn. I think you'd learn to like the coconut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coconuts are hard to get into.
Yeah, that is true. I watch Survivor. They have a tough time getting into a coconut. You need like a machete or a sharpened stick.
Or like a big rock.
Yeah, I don't think they had a big rock on the boat.
That's, maybe they had a machete.
Maybe.
Do you think they started rationing their oranges?
Definitely.
Also, let's just think about this. Who brings just a bag of oranges for snacks? Like, oh, we're going to get on a boat. You got your bag of oranges? All right, we're ready to go. Now we're good.
Not the snacks that I bring. We each ate cookies before doing this. So how's the snacks?
Like normal people. Where's my sack full of Milanos? That's what I want to take on my boat ride.
The real question is, if you were on a boat with somebody else, trapped at sea, how long before you think about eating that other person?
I would have to be very, very hungry.
Okay.
I have zero interest in cannibalism.
You know, if they died, well, you don't have to think about it.
I don't know.
To the point of, like, I have to, you know, in their life, I don't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, but if they died of, like, natural causes, like, they were just the first to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think it would take a lot for me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me neither. All right, here's my other one. I'm going to give you a quiz.
I'm just going to stay on land, if that's cool.
Sure. I'm definitely not getting in a motorboat in the ocean and just, like, tool it around.
Let's just keep the island on our left.
Absolutely not, yeah. The water scares me anyway.
All water, or just ocean water?
Any water, you can't see the bottom.
Okay.
Because there's probably sharks and alligators in there.
Healthy fear of the unknown. I like it. Okay. What do we got? We got a quiz.
What percentage of guitars are sold to people who play in praise and worship bands?
Ooh, percentage of guitars.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So this is in the United States, percentage of total guitars sold.
Total guitars are now
sold to people who play in worship bands.
Yep.
65%.
Oh, it's lower. It's like it's one third.
Okay, that's way lower than when you said it that way. I thought it was going to be surprising.
One third is surprising. Yeah,
that makes total sense. Like, one third makes a sense. Look at all the people who are out there, you know, picking up guitar, playing their three chord jams for Jesus. You know, that's not surprising.
I think one third is pretty surprising. You think of like all the guitars sold in the United States.
Yeah,
they're going towards worship bands, not just kids in their garage anymore.
I get it.
You know, you play guitar.
I do, not in a worship band.
No,
but I do play guitar.
Yeah.
But I've not bought one in a lot of years, so I'm probably not factored into that statistic.
Probably not. Yeah. Yeah, that's. I thought that was interesting. That one third of guitars going to worship bands. So look, if you own a guitar, you're like, I want to learn how to play guitar.
Yeah.
Join a church.
There it is. That's the place.
Church will teach you how to play guitar.
I don't guarantee that that's true, but yeah. There are probably plenty of churches who will allow you to play, whether you know how to play or not. So there's that.
I've been to some churches, and
guitarists did not know what they were doing.
I'm going to say that holds up.
Yep.
You know, they're making noise.
There's some great
joyful noise, right?
There's some great YouTube clips of like the worst contemporary worship band like solos and stuff like that, where people like go off on like a saxophone solo or something in the middle of a worship song, and it's like completely off key, like not even close. And
I bet.
Yeah, it's
horrifying
and hilarious all at the same time. Mostly only hilarious because I'm not present for it when it happens.
Yeah. The church I worked
Schadenfreude at. Schadenfreude or whatnot.
The church I worked at before this, there when I was interviewing them, they were like, we have a really good praise and worship band.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to them. And they were wrong. Like, they were not right.
Yeah. We're not always good at self-critique. That's not always our strong suit.
Maybe compared to some other Lutheran churches in their area, they were miles ahead.
Sure.
But no, they were not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Maybe we should have some empathy for them, Patrick.
Maybe. And that brings us to our topic.
Segway.
Yes. This is from BaptistNews.com.
Ooh.
We don't often go to the Baptist News. I don't often find myself on BaptistNews.com.
Didn't even know that was a thing, but okay. BaptistNews.com. What do we got?
Yeah. Do we have a LutheranNews.com?
I mean, you were looking at the Living Lutheran site. That's kind of like Lutheran News.
Yeah. They don't really have a lot of news on there.
Then no, I guess, is the answer. You have to be like, you don't have to be salty about it. You just
said no. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think part of the problem is that there's so many different branches of, like, what would be Lutheran News?
Sure.
Would it be Lutheran News according to who, right?
Sure. Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, there's plenty of different branches of Baptist out there.
Yeah.
They're all the same. They don't think that.
I'm giving my questioning face for those listeners at home. Yeah. All right. What do we got?
All right. Have you heard the one about empathy being a sin?
Is this a joke? I don't understand.
That's the headline. I think they need to work.
Yeah.
I was an editor of the school newspaper. I'm going to say they need to work on that headline.
Yeah, headline needs some work. Have you heard the one about empathy being a sin? Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about empathy being a sin.
Okay. Do you know who John Piper is?
I absolutely do not.
Okay.
Actually, I have heard the name, but I couldn't like pick him out of a crowd or anything.
So he's a Christian pastor and author.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty big deal, I think, in the Baptist world.
Okay.
And his website, Desiring God, are you familiar with that?
That does sound familiar, yep.
Yeah, it sounds familiar to me, too. I'm sure I've come across it a few times.
Sure, someone has probably reposted something from it somewhere that I've seen.
Yeah, I probably disagreed with.
Speaking of empathy, tell you what.
I'm just saying, yeah. We're allowed to healthily disagree. Well, his website and his church that he's recently resigned from.
In scandal or just resigned out of, like, you know, he's retiring?
Some scandal.
Okay.
But we're not going to get into that.
Okay.
Because I don't know enough about it.
Sure. So that's not why we're here. Got it. This time, that's not why we're here.
Not this time, yeah. In 2019,
Joe Rogan. I'm going to imagine that it was Joe Rogan. Is probably that okay?
Who succeeded Piper, his president of Bethlehem College and Seminary, wrote in a post. And he borrowed from C.S. Lewis. And so this was written in 2019, but I think it's like come back up through some other interviews. So this is kind of like the start, but it's not like...
Callback.
Not like, hey, let's dig up these things written 2 years ago by some guy that I don't know.
Right. I gotcha. Okay. So he followed up John Piper.
Yeah.
And he's quoting C.S. Lewis.
He's writing in the style of C.S. Lewis.
Ooh, that's weird.
Yeah. It's kind of like how Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs were in the style of Solomon.
Right. I mean, I understood what you meant when you said it. I'm just saying it's weird.
Sure. It's like that's a throw back and a throw forward.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Preview.
Yeah.
The Screwtape Letters. Are you familiar?
I am. Very. I like the Screwtape Letters a lot. It's one of my favorites.
Me too. So tell us about the Screwtape Letters real quick so we can kind of get into this.
Yeah. Short version of Screwtape Letters. Every human being has a demon assigned to them by Satan. And the job of the demon is to lure you away from God. And like every good bureaucracy, that demon reports to a mid-level manager. And so Screwtape Letters are letters from the mid-level manager to the demon, giving him advice on how to best lure the subject away from God.
Yep. Perfect.
Because what better description for hell is there than mid-level management?
The bureaucracy.
That's right, bureaucracy and mid-level management. That's it.
So Screwtape is the head demon, and Wormwood is the one he's writing to.
The mid-level manager. Well,
The
Wormwood is the demon assigned to a person.
Correct.
Screwtape is the mid-level manager.
Yes.
The head demon would be Satan.
Satan, sure. We don't want to take that away from her, right?
Right.
Don't fact-check us. Here it is. By elevating, this is how he's writing as if he's Screwtape to Wormwood.
So, okay. All right. I got you.
By elevating empathy over compassion as the superior virtue, there is now an entire culture devoted to the total immersion of empathy. Books, articles, and social media all trumpet the importance of checking one's belief, values, judgments, and reason at the door of empathy. What do you think?
So his claim is that the culture has said empathy is better than compassion, and that, in fact, empathy is not. That's the claim that he's trying to make here. Well, yeah. I mean, he's making that reverse claim because he's saying that the demon supports empathy because empathy is great and is easier to lure us away.
Yes.
Because empathy requires us to leave our own beliefs at the door.
Checking one's beliefs, values, judgments, and reason at the door of empathy.
That doesn't sound like empathy to me. I think we have a fundamental disagreement on the definition of empathy, which is a legitimate problem. Like, I mean, if you get into like the social sciences and thinking about empathy, like empathy is not clearly defined as to what is empathic and what is not.
Yeah.
And so there is that legitimate problem of what do we actually define as empathy? But I think he and I have a very different understanding of what empathy is, because I don't think that I check my beliefs at the door in order to be empathetic to someone else.
Yeah. I'm okay. I'm like, tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah.
I'm initially going to say I disagree.
Right.
But I'm open to hearing Joe Rigney's Rigney, not Rogan. His idea on this. I want to at least like,
sure.
Like, give me your thesis here.
I mean, I like compassion. So if we want to say that compassion is better than empathy, like, okay, maybe there's a thesis there that we can play with, but I don't think that he and I have the same understanding of what empathy is.
Yeah. I'm going to try to give him the benefit of the doubt here, according to the things that he quotes here.
Sure. All right. What do we got? Quote away.
Another quote from Joe Rigney.
Rogan.
My empathy is running thin.
No, that's your patience. That's different.
Rightly used, empathy is a power tool in the hands of the weak and suffering. By it, we can weaponize victims that they and those who hide behind them are indulged at every turn without regard for whether such indulgence is wise or prudent or good for them. According to Baptist News, their commentary. In short, empathy is a thin, according to Joe Rigney.
Empathy is a thin?
Is a sin.
Is a sin, okay. Yes. So the claim here, I think it says something that we have to keep going back and clarifying what it is that Mr. Rigney is actually saying. The claim here is that empathy is a shield of the people who have, of the victim.
Yeah, it's not a shield, it's a power tool.
Power tool. So yeah. It is demanding empathy, demanding that people show them empathy is the way for the victims to reclaim power. In the situation, is that what he's saying?
Yes.
That sounds absolutely ridiculous.
And those who hide behind them.
I don't even know what that means.
Dun dun dun.
Who hides behind? I have no idea what he's getting at.
I think you do know.
I really don't. At this point, I'm like, I don't understand what he's driving. Does he like? All right. Does he get into what he is defining as empathy? How is he describing?
Yeah. Empathy? So let's get into what he says empathy is, because I think this is probably the most. Thing here, I don't think when we say the word empathy, we're talking about the same thing already.
Right.
And two, I also don't think he's right. So, right. Not even like the word definition. I think what he is going to land on is also wrong.
Excellent.
So,
this is classic Inigo Montoya. Yes. I do not think it means what.
So recently, he was on a podcast where this came up again.
This is like in 2021. And this happened.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The podcast is called Man Rampant.
Yikes. Okay.
Whatever. And the episode is titled "The Sin of Empathy."
Okay.
This is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. So this is his analogy that he's going to use.
All right. Let's hear it.
I'm going to paraphrase it.
I like analogies.
Okay. Imagine you've got someone drowning in quicksand.
Do you drown in quicksand?
Theoretically, right? Like if drowning is
suffocation. Okay. All right. So someone is sinking in quicksand you are concerned for the possibility of them drowning in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Empathy would want you to jump into the quicksand with them, both feet. And it feels like that's going to be more loving because they're going to feel like, I'm glad you're here with me in the quicksand. Problem is, now you're both sinking.
Mm-hmm.
Sympathy, on the other hand, stays safely on dry land. And, you know, keeps one foot on the shore, grabs onto a branch, and then steps one foot in there with you to try to pull you out. That's sympathy, and that's, according to Rigney, that's actually helpful.
Sure.
But to the person who's in there, it can feel like they're, you're judging them.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit. Number one, quicksand is not nearly as prevalent as people think it's going to be.
I know.
So
when I was a kid, I was like, quicksand is scary.
Yeah, that's a legit thing that we should all be afraid of, and it's not.
Never.
So that's number one.
It's in like all the kids' movies from the 80s and 90s.
Absolutely.
And like, not a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, number two, on a more serious note, I think there's a legitimate claim to say that you shouldn't just jump into quicksand both feet.
Agreed.
But I don't think that's empathy, right? Yeah. I think that's where our differentiation is here. Like, we talk about this within the context of, you know, pastoral care in seminary and things like that. We talk about the differentiated self. Mm-hmm. And this is, how do I maintain myself as far as who I am and who I am in the world with that, and still allow someone else to share themselves with me, right? Mm-hmm. So when I go into a pastoral care situation, your suffering does not need to become my suffering.
Yeah.
Right. And that's helpful, right? If as soon as you're breaking down in tears, if I'm breaking down in tears, I can't necessarily help you the way that you need me to help you, right? Imagine going to a doctor, and as soon as you as soon as they tell you that, you know, you have some terminal illness they can't cure, they just are like in a puddle of mush because they're so broken up over the tragedy of this situation you're facing. That's not what you want from your doctor, right? You want your doctor to be able to be removed enough that they can come up with plans and cares and opportunities for you to move forward, right? And so I do think there's a healthy thing to say, we shouldn't just jump both feet into the quicksand without a plan, without an intention. That being said, I don't think that jumping in with both feet is empathic. I think jumping in with both feet is just a poor differentiation of yourself, that you are overly enmeshed in someone else's crises if that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where our center difference is. And calling the other thing sympathy, I think, is really just a way of saying this is my way of grabbing headline, right? And if I want to stand on the side and, you know, lean in, right, and give them a hand, and that's sympathy, not empathy. That's just a headline to be able to say empathy is a sin, which is silly. It's just silly.
Yeah, this is weird. Like, and so let's get into, like, what are the real definitions of sympathy and empathy?
Yeah, what do you got?
So this is my understanding of it.
All right.
And maybe we can see that. I didn't look those up. So.
Oh, all right.
I can look it up real quick.
No, you're good, Miriam. Go right ahead.
Merriam-Webster.
Yeah.
I identify like more, I more with Webster than the Miriam.
I think they're both dudes.
I don't care.
Oh, okay.
I just like Webster more.
I thought you thought it was like Miriam, like...
like Maid Miriam?
Yeah.
Like from Robin Hood?
Is that Maid Miriam? Is that her name?
I think so.
I don't know.
I identify more Webster. That's like the show.
Would you prefer to be Funkin' Waggles? You could be... Mr. Oxford?
That's it.
What other dictionaries are there out there? I don't know.
So MrDictionary.com is basically my understanding. Somebody tells you this hard thing that they're going through. Sympathy is the idea of, like, I feel bad that you are going through something hard.
Yes.
Empathy is I'm choosing to imagine what it would be like for me to also go through that same hard thing,
mm-hmm.
and therefore have a similar emotional output that you do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the difference between the two.
Yeah.
So sometimes when we draw on our empathy, it's drawing from our own past experiences. So if somebody has lost a loved one, I'm drawing from the times I've lost a loved one to say, like, I can share in the emotion, the turmoil that you're going through based on my own past experiences. But also it is this idea of, like, even if I have not, I can, you know, in some ways use my imagination mm-hmm. to feel like that's what it would feel like if I was in a similar situation, and I can understand better the experience you're going through.
Yeah. You see this developing kids all the time, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, even now my, you know, William, right, who's about two,
yeah.
you know, he understands when someone feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
But Sophia, who's now six, right, she's starting to be able to, like, imagine what it would be like, and we're able to say to her, what do you think it would be like if someone said that to you, right? We're able, and when she's able to flip that around, she's able to start having that empathic response to, oh, I wouldn't like it if someone said that to me, right? William understands, hey, they're crying, they're upset. Sophia is able to start understanding, oh, when I said this thing, if someone had said that to me, it would hurt my feelings. And that's the emotional progress that we make, and that is the difference that we mm-hmm. see. And as we get older, and as our emotional selves continue to mature, a healthy sense of empathy allows you to put yourself in that place without losing your own self, right? That's the sure. self-differentiation that we're talking about, right? You put yourself in that emotional place without losing the context of, but I'm not actually in that place.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine what it would be like. You can connect with their emotional response, and you're able to stand your own 2 feet, I guess, on the side of the quicksand, I guess.
Yeah.
If we want to go back to that,
uh-huh.
maybe we should just leave the quicksand in the dust.
Yeah, I think in the analogy, it's like I'm on dry land, but I can understand what it would feel like
right.
to be overwhelmed, scared, panicky in that situation. And so I can recognize that a person not only needs to get out of the quicksand, they also might need their fear and their overwhelm of emotion to have somebody there to help them calm down.
Right.
Not just here's a hand, but calming words attached to that.
Right.
Not here's a hand as I'm yelling at you.
Right.
Because that
right.
may make the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, this is weird.
Yeah.
And also, I think if we're at the place look, no offense, Joe Rigney, Man Rampant or whatever. Some offense, maybe.
A little offense, yeah.
But if we're really here as Christians saying, you know, the problem with the world today, too much empathy.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Like, as people, this seems like this is not the issues with, like,
no,
that any member of Christendom, I would think, would want to plant their flag on, of like, this is the real problem.
Yeah.
Empathy.
You know, and so I think this is where we get into, and this is now me speculating because I can't say for sure what Mr. Rigney means by this. But I think the speculation here would be, right, if this is the power tool of the victim, as it's been described, right?
Yes.
So the person in the quicksand is demanding that you jump into the quicksand with them. If that's what this, if that's what Mr. Rigney assumes is empathy, right? So they're saying, jump in and save me. And if you try to take care of yourself, then you're not doing what they want. At times that might be true, right? If you have someone who's in quicksand and you look around and you run off to grab a branch or to grab something to help them, they might feel like you're abandoning them.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never been in quicksand, but okay, maybe that's a thing.
Yeah.
Versus, like, you know, staying there and not actually being able to do that or jumping in with them.
Yeah.
And so there are probably ways in which that happens in the real world too. But again, that's not, you're actually exhibiting empathy when you're running off to find something, right? You're not exhibiting empathy by jumping in. And I don't think they're demanding to be helped.
Sure.
Right, I think that's the key here. They're not demanding that you jump in with them. They're demanding that they be helped. And I think that we're just trying to say, well, I want to help you on my terms. I don't want to help you the way you want me to help you. I want to help you the way I want to help you. And that is concerning, right? This gets us back a little bit to our criminal justice episode, which was last week. I don't know. At some point we did that.
Last week.
And so, you know, when we talked about the criminal justice episode, we talk about the communities that are crying out for relief, right? That, and they're saying, hey, we have bad relationships with the police in our neighborhoods. Police are, you know, shooting our people in our communities, and we do not feel safe and protected from the police. And the police, frankly, are probably saying we don't feel safe in that neighborhood for a variety of reasons, right? That a healthy sense of empathy would allow both people to imagine what it would be like to be in the other person's shoes. It would allow those community members to feel, what would it be like to be a police officer who walks up knowing every car I walk up to might have a gun in it, right? And it would allow police officers to imagine what it would be like to say, what would it be like to know every time I have an encounter with the police, you know, I or someone I love might die, right? You know, that's empathy. Neither one of those are jumping into the quicksand with the other, though I think there's definitely a community in quicksand here. But neither one of those is jumping into the quicksand. And so empathy is not a sin. Let's just go back to that. Empathy is not a sin.
Agreed.
You're on notice, Mr. Rigney.
I'll never meet you, most likely. And even if I did, I probably wouldn't.
Whatever. I'm going to tweet this out at BaptistNews.com and say empathy is not a sin.
No, BaptistNews.com is with you.
Oh, they're with me?
Oh, yeah. Baptist News is 100%. This is weird.
Oh, okay. I thought this was on Baptist News because they were like, oh, yeah, we dig this.
No. They're reporting on it, but they're like, They're firmly saying, like, I don't know what this is.
Well, happening. Let's just go on record here. When Baptist News and I agree,
yeah,
that should tell you something.
So for me, okay, I'm going to use an analogy here that I've heard before.
If it doesn't involve quicksand, I want nothing to do with it.
It does not. That I think has kind of this similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on our Nextdoor app, are you on Nextdoor?
I'm not, but I'm familiar.
Okay. So it's like social media for your neighborhood,
right? Which is like, that's what I need in my life.
Yes. When we moved into our house, the previous owner said, you can get on Nextdoor. It's helpful for knowing who the crazies are in your neighborhood.
Excellent. There we go. I'm like, okay.
So that's how I view Nextdoor.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I go on there every now and again. You know, like if the power goes out, sometimes I go on there, like somebody called CenterPoint and they're like figuring it out and they just post the thing. So I don't have to call CenterPoint.
Right.
Which I don't want to do. So like that's what he said. So anyway, on this, they were talking about at one point near our neighborhood under an overpass, there's a significant homeless population.
Sure.
And so some people are asking, like, what should we do? You know, that's the question, right? Like, we're a safe middle class neighborhood. There's homeless people somewhat nearby us. Mm-hmm. What do we need to do? How do we fix this problem? And one of our neighbors somewhere, I don't know who this person is, was saying, like, well, don't give them anything. I saw a guy panhandling and then go get into his Mercedes and drive off.
Ooh, yeah.
So the solution is don't give them anything.
Because they're probably just trying to rip you off. They probably all drive, all homeless people drive Mercedes.
And I have heard this from other Christians before.
That all homeless people drive Mercedes?
Well, kind of. Okay. I mean, like, why don't they get a job kind of thing? But sure. I think this is saying, like, because there are a handful of people out there, and maybe even more than a handful, I don't know, who are abusing charity, we should abolish charity.
Right.
Kind of the thing. Because there is this abuse, no one should be helped underneath the overpass.
Sure.
Because there's the potential for abuse. Now, not even checking, like, what does that mean? One, did I really see what I think I saw?
Mm-hmm.
Two, is this an outlier? Not, I don't know. Or more likely, is this a thing I heard?
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of like using that thing for real information.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think we've seen this, like, because charity can be abused, we should just not engage in charity.
Yeah.
And
I hear that. Yep.
And you've heard, I'm sure you've heard that before from followers of Jesus.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I think that this is kind of the similar thing. Because empathy can be abused, we should not engage in it at all. It's a sin.
Yeah, but I don't think empathy is what's being abused. I think it's just a misdefinition of empathy that is the abuse that we're imagining.
I think what's being, I'm going to put some words here into this movement and Baptist News. Well, let me quote this other guy here.
Sure.
So they said this has been picked up by other pastors. They're kind of like taking this and running with it. So here's another guy, James White. He kind of said this. So what is the problem with empathy today? This is on his blog.
Mm-hmm.
He asks, we are in fact told to weep with those who weep.
Which is true. Biblical.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Weep with those who weep. Rejoice with those who rejoice.
Yep.
I think it's a really important passage in Scripture.
Yeah.
It reminds us that even if I think what they're weeping over is not that big of a deal, or even if what they're rejoicing I think is not really going to be good for them, that's part of my job.
Yep.
Yeah. But that assumes those who weep have a reason for weeping that is in line with God's revelation.
Nope.
There's no this asterisk in the Bible attached to this. We are not to weep with the drug dealer who accidentally drops his stash down the storm drain in New York City.
Okay.
Fair, I guess. I'm not sure anybody was asking us to do that, but okay. We are not to weep with the bank robber who botches the job and ends up in the slammer. Personally, I think we actually kind of are.
Yeah, because that whole visit people in prison thing that we
Not because they're a victim of their own crime.
Right.
But because they're a human being and we want to make sure they're taken care of, even in the slammer.
Yeah.
We are plainly to exercise control even in our sympathy. We are not to sympathize with sin, nor are we to sympathize with rebellion or evil.
Well, so which one is it? Because a minute ago, sympathy was good and now sympathizing is bad.
Yeah.
I'm really confused.
Me too. I'm going to put some words out there that may be unfair to these people, but I think this is...
I think they have it coming at this point.
I think they're dancing around these things and they don't want to say this. I think they're saying with the new LGBTQ civil rights stuff, there's a greater emphasis on on people being empathetic towards this minority group in America.
Sure.
And they're like,
towards the suffering of people who are saying, this is our experience. We need you to understand that this is suffering. Yeah.
Yes. And with a rise in a bolder or more dominant culturally, message from the Black community saying, this is our experience in suffering.
Sure.
And I think instead of wanting to engage with those two things and honestly taking a firm look at ourselves and saying, how am I contributing to this?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to better empathize, care for, and love these people? It's easy to be like, you know what? You're wrong.
I shouldn't be caring for them at all. I shouldn't have to imagine that.
Yeah. Why? And I think, you know, these men are Baptist. So I think based on their theology, they're like, well, hey, homosexuality is a sin. So why would I empathize with somebody who's telling me their life is really hard, potentially by being a member of the LGBTQ community in a predominantly straight world, especially one that at best historically has not been very good to me.
Yep.
You know, at worst, it still isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and they're saying, like, why would we should not empathize with that?
Yeah.
Or a Black community that says, hey, we're suffering and I don't feel that same thing in my interactions with the police or bureaucracy or the government or these things, I don't have those same experiences. So it's easier to say, like, you're just wrong.
Yeah.
And you're using my emotions to try to manipulate me into feeling compassion over a thing that's not real. That's my inclination, that this is what they're really dancing around, but they don't really want to say that outright.
Well, sure. I mean, I wouldn't want to say that outright either, because that's clearly inappropriate. No, but I think that's a healthy thing for us to remember, that empathy does. Empathy calls us to put ourselves in other people's shoes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't require to give up our own identity, but it requires us to acknowledge the humanity and the reality of someone else's experience. And if we're convinced that their experience is wrong, why would we want to? But let's take the drug dealer, right? Because I think, you know, we can both get behind the guy in prison, right? That's we should be weeping with. Well, let's take the drug dealer, right? We don't need to weep with the drug dealer that the stash is in the sewer, right? Mm-hmm. But we can weep with the drug dealer over the plight of whatever has driven him or her into the status of being a drug dealer, right? Because we don't know the life circumstances that have led to that point. And maybe it's weeping with the drug. You know, if you're walking down the street and you see this person weeping next to the sewer and you sit down and weep with them, maybe it's that act of compassion or empathy, we might say, that allows them to experience something outside of the life they thought they knew. Like, maybe that's a turning point for them, right? There is no asterisk to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. We should be aware and we should be cautious, or we should be caring for ourselves, but that doesn't mean that there's an asterisk. We're still called to do that.
For sure. 100%. I think this idea of, like, taking this in another direction here, like, those, you know, in the throes of addiction. And I do think you could make a strong biblical case, one, that addiction is wrong. It is not only wrong for a person in, like, a societal sense, you know, you want to use biblical language, a sin against what God has asked for us. Yet, if we are unable to say, like, I can be empathetic to a person who is so attached to this thing that is clearly damaging them and every one of their relationships, and unable to escape it, then if we cannot understand that motivation or identify with that kind of motivation, even though we have our own sins that maybe are just easier to manage, that how can we really offer assistance and guidance and true compassion in those places? That does not make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons that sometimes sin language can be so challenging for us too, right? Because there's so much clinical evidence coming out now that addiction really is rooted in a disease, right?
Yeah.
So much addiction is not just behavioral.
Sure.
There's so much more chemical stuff happening within your body when you're suffering from addiction. And there are things that are perhaps physically beyond your control. No one, you know, goes up to someone who has been diagnosed with cancer and, you know, refuses to have empathy or compassion and that and whatever is going on, right? And so we should be more willing to approach something like addiction, not just because it's a disease, but because it's humanity, right? Because when we see someone who's suffering from cancer, we see them as a person. Yeah. When we see someone suffering from addiction, we should see them as a person, and we should be showing them empathy on that part.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even sin, right? I mean, even if you want to say, I don't want to support sin, okay, that's fine. I don't really want to support sin either. I don't want to, you know, support someone's decision to go out and murder people, but I want to have empathy and compassion on what led them to that place in hopes that I can see their humanity in a way that can lead them away from that life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Seeing people's humanity is never sinful.
Yeah.
I don't care what they're doing. Seeing them as a human being is not a sin.
Agreed. Yeah.
That shouldn't be revelatory. Like, that should.
This is banana cakes to me that any. And we're not talking about, like.
Banana cake sounds real good right now.
I like a lemon cake.
Banana bread?
Banana bread, yes.
This is banana bread to Patrick. All right, I got you.
This is not just some weird offshoot of Christianity. I mean, this is John Piper is a pretty major figure in the evangelical movement. Desiring God is a pretty major website of the evangelical movement. So these things have influence in Christendom in America. Sure. These are not just like, hey, look, we can find some weirdo out there who says all kinds of crazy things.
Which we can.
Even in the ELCA world. I mean, like that, there could be right down the street some crazy person saying all kinds of crazy things, you know, that's a member of our denomination.
Sure.
You know, even a member of leadership in our denomination. But this is a big thing, and it blows my mind that followers of Jesus, who like basically existence on earth is like rooted in empathy, this idea of God becoming like us and experiencing the things we experience, jumping into our quicksand in a very real way and saying like, I should not have to do that for somebody else is insanity to me. That the fact I cannot imagine a version of Christianity that exists without empathy. Like, it is so central to how we experience other human beings and how we share in the good news with other human beings.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense, you know? But here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Mr. Riggers?
Rigney.
Rigney. Rogan. Not Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan. Thank you, Joe Rogan.
I don't know what Joe Rogan thinks about empathy. I don't know.
He probably agrees.
I don't think much about what Joe Rogan thinks about anything. Yeah,
you're probably better off.
So, but I don't know about you, but after reading this article, like, I did have to check myself. I'm like, who's it tough for me to have empathy for?
Sure. Like, that's a good question.
Like, it made that question of, like, who am I struggling to understand their worldview and kind of, like, putting myself in their position.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a healthy question. The problem with the initial author from Mr. Piper and then Mr. Rigney, the problem there is that they would say you shouldn't be showing empathy. Like like it's hard because it's wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not right. Just because something's hard doesn't mean it's wrong. That's not
Agreed.
Did you come up with an answer?
I did.
Yeah. You want to do a big reveal, or is this like a internal soul searching?
Yeah, I think sometimes it would be, you know, hard for me to have like empathy, especially in today's world with COVID, of like people who are anti-COVID protocols and anti-vaccine and yet develop COVID and are seeking medical treatment. Yeah. It's really hard for me to have empathy there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, there's like, we're all like, this is what we do to help with this. And you're like, I don't want to do any of it. And then you get it and you're like, I'm really hurting and I'm going to the hospital and I'm scared. And part of me in my own vindictive self wants to be like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, I can definitely say that is hard. Like, that's a hard thing for me to say. And so sometimes it has to be like, why is it, a reasonable portion of our population feels this deep distrust of the medical community and this deep distrust of the news media and the government at large.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard, you know, how to wade through those waters and hard to say like, and this is how it's being fixed. That's hard, you know?
Yeah.
And so, that's kind of like, that's where this article led me, is to some introspection of like, I think these guys are banana cakes and unable to empathize with potentially the LGBTQ community or the black community or the minority community in America. But then I had to ask myself, who am I struggling it out for? Yeah.
But I think the fact that you're willing to ask that question is what, I don't want to say puts you above, but separates you from.
You could say it puts me above. I'll allow it.
it separates, right? It puts us in, we're asking a different question. And I think that's important and valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Excellent. Well, hey, if you liked this episode or any of our Beyond Sunday material, let's try that again. Hey, if you liked this episode or any of our other work, you can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com. If you have a place where you've seen quicksand, we want to hear your quicksand stories for sure, because I'm not entirely convinced that it's real. I think it's just the product of 80s movies and TV. So if you've ever seen quicksand, write us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be somewhere, right? It's a word.
Like, it does exist in the dictionary. Yeah.
You know, like, it's not like the Hardy Boys made it up.
Maybe they did. Maybe the Hardy Boys did make it up.
I don't know whoever wrote the Hardy Boys. I just remember reading a Hardy Boys book and it was quicksand.
There you go.
It was scary.
And at least one of them.
Probably all of them. I don't know.
The Hardy Boys are like old, written in like the 40s, 50s, something like that. Is that right?
I don't know. You know, I feel like I read a Hardy Boys book in the.
I read Boxcar Kids. Do you ever read Boxcar Children?
Was there quicksand on it?
I don't remember quicksand and Boxcar Children, but they lived in a train by themselves. I'm like, how does Child Services not know about this?
I know. It's at the time I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. In reality, like, that's a horrific, that's a horror story. Like, this is
why is this 13-year-old in charge of his 5-year-old brother? Like, that's not a good idea. And why are they out on adventures together?
And somebody get people involved. Save the boxcar children.
All right, I think we've done that. All right. I've got empathy for the boxcar children.
Me too. Yeah. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.